The best journalism advice I've ever received didn't come from a journalist. I was a junior in college, living in the Christiana Towers on the campus of the University of Delaware. There were four of us in the apartment, myself, Scott Capro, Dan Monahan, and Paul Dewar. And one night, we were getting ready to go out to the bars, which meant, you know, the college ritual, drinking, hitting on women, hopefully hooking up without throwing up. In my case, the hooking up was a long shot. And I always remember this. Right before we left on this night, Dewar, a Long Islander out of Plainview, said, "You know, at the end of it all, it's really just about the stories." And I know, you know, all these years later, it sounds sort of simple, but that thought has absolutely stuck with me. The highs, the lows, the book releases, the book rejections, births, deaths, Trump, pandemic, it's all truly about the stories. My name is Jeff Perlman. I'm the New York Times bestselling author of 9 books and the host of Two Writers, Sling and Yang, a podcast where one writer, me, talks writing with another writer every single week. Today's episode features Gabrielle Stone, the actress and author of the fantastic, self-published, wildly successful memoir of love, rejection, and rediscovery, Eat, Pray, FML. This is episode number 167. Let's sling some yang.
Dad, being quarantined sucks, and so does your podcast.
Gabrielle, first, thanks for doing this. How are you holding up during pandemic?
It's been a little weird, as I'm sure it is for everybody. For me personally, I haven't had a lot of creative juices flowing. Like there's so many things I could be writing at home. I could be working on so many different writing projects, and I just haven't had the oomph to do that. So I've been trying to just be patient with myself. And, you know, as long as I get a couple things done a day, then that's, I've done okay. And it's been weird. I've been feeling the heaviness that the world is feeling.
It's weird how we have all this time and I've never seen more people less productive.
Yeah.
What is that? How do you explain that?
I don't know. And because I'm the person that when my life is, you know, normal day to day, I am like, oh, I wish I wasn't out right now. I just want to be home writing, or, oh, I need to get all this done. And I'm so insanely productive normally. So this has been a complete 180 for me, but I've just kind of had to honor where my feelings are at and not push myself. But I think it's just sometimes people are like, oh, you have all this free time at home now. And they forget that the world's going through this really heavy shit. Like, this is something that nobody's dealt with before, and it's scary, and you can feel the fear from a lot of people. So I think it's important to remember, I mean, if you are productive at home, then great and good on you. But I think it's important to remember that we're going through something that's not time off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's energetically feeling it. So I think I've been on that side of it.
All right. So you had a book that came out last year, 2019. Eat, Pray, FML, Fuck My Life. As you document, a year and a half into your marriage, you find out your husband's been having an affair with a 19-year-old for 6 months. You file for divorce. 2 weeks later, you meet another guy. You're going to go on a romantic vacation. And then right before you're supposed to leave, he tells you he has to go on himself, by himself, and you decide to go on a trip. And I'm really fascinated by the idea of putting yourself out there in writing. We live in a world where people are embarrassed of everything, right?
Right.
Generally, the impulse is to hide stuff from people. John left me. I can't tell anyone. Please don't tell anyone. You know, or it's just this thing. You know, we don't want people to know our deepest secrets because we deem it as really embarrassing. And then you write a book and just throw it all out there. And I sort of wonder, I'm really fascinated, like, where does that come from and why would you even want to do that?
So my story was kind of unique. I wouldn't have called myself a writer before I had written a few short screenplays that I shot and did really well. By no means was I a writer. And when I found out that I was going to be taking this trip by myself, I was devastated. I mean, I was so in love with this guy and we had had this whirlwind romance and I was just broken. And it had kind of been so ridiculous how it was one thing after another. I found out about the cheating and then we got divorced and all this happened in such a tight window of time that it was so ridiculous. My friends would call me and be like, so we just wanted to see what's going on this week in the Netflix show that has become your life. And I decided that I was going to write the book the day I left on my trip. So I bought a journal and I wrote 3/4 of the book on the trip in that journal. And then when I came home, I finished it and copied everything over into my computer, obviously. But it just, I knew in my soul that what I was going through was going to help a lot of people heal. Heartbreak is universal. Men, women, we all go through it. It's shocking to see how many messages I've gotten from people who have read the book that are like, oh my God, I went through something so similar, or I went through something exactly like this. And it's really crazy to see how many humans deal with the same themes of loss and heartbreak and finding yourself and self-love. So I knew that in writing it, it was going to do a lot of good for a lot of people. And I think that's why I was so ready to kind of just lay it all out there. And everything in this book is how it happened. I didn't elaborate anything. Unfortunately, my life doesn't need that. And it's all the good and the bad and the ugly. Like, everything that I would not want people to probably read about me is in there. And I just knew that it needed to be authentic and honest in that way for people to really connect with it. And if people are going to judge me on some of my mistakes and some of the things I'm not so proud of, so be it. But it's far more worth it when I get all those messages from people about how it's helped them heal.
Do you think there's something, so you're a child of Hollywood, your mom famous, I mean, most famous role obviously was the mom in E.T., late father was an actor, like you grew up with this sort of, in this world. And I wonder if that lends itself in a way to putting yourself out there instead of having the instinct to, if your mom and dad were accountants, you know, or worked at the local library.
Right. I mean, and I'm also an actress. That's like what I do. So I've for 10 years have been, you know, putting myself on screen and being out there in some way. This was obviously a giant leap from that because it's all true and real and personal. But yeah, I would say so. I think the way I grew up definitely helped me not care as much as to what people may say. I guess like give me the balls to put it all out there, if you will.
Well, I want to ask a detour interruption question.
Okay.
Because so as a journalist for years and years, I always cringe when I hear the cliche question that I know someone's been asked 75 times. How many times in your life have you been asked, what's it like to have the mom of E.T. as your mom? Did you used to get that 100 times a year?
Almost every interview I do. It's not like, it doesn't necessarily come like the mom from E.T., but it's like, what's it like growing up with your mom? Who is your mom? And my answer is always the same, so it's probably pretty boring. And that's just, I had a really normal childhood. My parents did a really good job at making sure I was the priority. So if one of them took a job, the other one wouldn't work at that time, which is really hard to do in Hollywood when you have to kind of take work as it comes. If one of them was shooting out of town, we all went after a week. So we were never like away from each other often. They were at every soccer game, every ballet recital. Like I had a very normal childhood, except, you know, I would go to set with my mom. I remember when we were in New Zealand on the set of Peter Jackson's The Frighteners, and I was 6, and I walked in and she was like, look, honey, I want you to lick mommy's blood off of her arm. It's corn syrup. Everything's fine. So obviously like those types of scenarios were different than I guess a normal child would have, but I had a great childhood. I got to travel to a lot of awesome places and see a lot of awesome things. And growing up with her on sets really helped when I became an actress. I felt really comfortable there. It felt like a second home.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to make you answer that question, but you answered it very eloquently. I was just going to say it's a really bad question, but you answered it really well. So
clearly, thank you.
I couldn't even imagine the idea of journaling a book, like journaling a book. It's beyond my comprehension. When you're sitting there and you're keeping a journal on your trip, and you're thinking, I'm going to make this into a book, are you literally writing the journal as you would a book? Or are you just putting your thoughts down and thinking later, I'm going to take this and convert it into something usable?
No, I wrote it as the book. So if you open my journal and you open the book, it's freaky close, barring obviously the edits that I did and fine tuning and stuff. But you open my journal and it's like chapter one. And I wrote it exactly as it was happening. So when I would leave, for example, because I didn't have any time to plan on this trip because I found out I was going by myself 48 hours before. When I was in London, which was where our flight stopped over to go to Italy, I stayed in London because I had a friend there. And it wasn't until I was there that I decided where I was going to go next. So it was very like spur of the moment. So when I would leave London, at the airport, I would write all of my London stuff. When I took the train from Amsterdam to Paris, I would just write for hours. And I did that a lot even when I was in the country I was visiting. I would go to a cafe or find, you know, a restaurant that I wanted to have lunch at, and I would just write. It was really like therapy for me. So yeah, I wrote not in a journal style. I wrote it as if it was a book that I just, you know, needed to transfer later. And it's very, very close to how it ended up being.
Right. So I've been a diary keeper since 1996. Literally, I have 23 diaries, right? And I feel like every now and then I'll be writing in a diary and I'll be writing, thinking of my kids reading it. I'm dead and it's 60 years from now. My kids are reading it. And other times I'm just writing it as I'm writing it. Do you find that writing with the idea that it's going to be a book impacted at all the way you were writing what you were writing?
That's a really good question. And that's saying a lot because I've done so many freaking interviews about this book since it came out. So the fact that that's a new question is like, good on you. Yes, it did impact it, but it didn't change what emotion was coming out. So it changed the way that I was writing as opposed to like being like, fuck him. It would be more eloquently put when I was writing it for the book, but it definitely had the same emotion under it because I was writing it as it was happening. It wasn't like I was going back and revisiting something from a year ago that I was then telling a story about. Like, I was writing it as it was happening. So the emotions were very much so completely on point with that. So it was definitely different in the eloquency of how it was constructed and written, but I wouldn't say that I sat there and was like, well, how can I make this sound good? It just flowed out. I think that's why I wrote it so quickly. Like, the whole thing was done in 2.5 months because it just needed to come out. So I think it's a really interesting question and I've never really thought about it before, but if I was going back and journaling about it, I don't know if it would have come out any different. It's a really good question.
I just want to say, you DM me yesterday and you said cursing or clean, and you just said the book took you 2.5 months, and my books take about 2 years. So I just want to say, fuck you. That's fucking bullshit. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's infuriating.
To be fair, that was like the first, you know, getting all of it done. But when I hired my editor to go through it, that was like another 4 month process. But yeah, I wrote it very quickly, but it was honestly because it was like therapy for me and it really just needed to come out. I almost feel like part of it was channeled in a way.
Wait, I have a question. All right. You hire an editor to go through the book. It's not like me writing about Brett Favre. Like, this is your personal, this is your life and you put everything into it and fuck this guy and this is me and blah, blah, blah. And some editor comes along and I don't know, was it a man or a woman?
It was a woman.
And she's like, well, maybe move this here and this there. Is there a part of you that's like, are you fucking kidding me? This is my opus.
Yeah. So it's actually really interesting because we did shop it to publishers at first. And the few big publishers that were interested were like, well, we kind of want to tone it down or we would like to shorten it here. And I just knew that wasn't going to be what needed to happen for my readers. So when I found this editor who I absolutely adore, she was also like, look, this is your real story. So if I ever say anything that you don't agree with, please tell me to fuck off. This is just me trying to help you get the book to where you feel comfortable with it going out. And there were times where she would suggest something and I'd be like, sorry, I'm not going to change that. Because I think she's in her late 30s, maybe early 40s. And there were some things where she was like, this isn't going to hit well. Like, this doesn't really need to be here. It's not necessary. And I was like, no, the demographic that this is going for, although I have readers of all ages, like, people will resonate with this, and it's gonna sit well.
Wait, what's an example? What's an example of something?
Well, a good example I would think is, I talk about a lot of my Instagram posts in the book, and what I was feeling and what the pictures are and how I was like posting them to connect with people at the time. And it turns out that like, that's everybody's favorite part. Like, I have a lot of readers every day, all my Europe pictures, which are from like 2 years ago now, get liked on my Instagram page. And it's because people are reading and then they go back to see the actual photo that I was talking about and like link it up with the time that they're reading about in the book. And it turned out to be like everybody's favorite part. So I'm really glad I didn't listen to that and take that out. She wanted me to tone that back a little bit. And it's been like a way that the readers are kind of like interactive while they're reading, which has been really cool.
All right. So I have a sliver of your book in front of me. I just want to read a little bit out loud real quick to get your take. So
awesome.
Yeah, the villa was even impressive at night. 3 floors, a huge pool, tons of rooms, all in white. We again went over the plan for the next day, and I was given the responsibility of setting an alarm and getting everyone up at 10 a.m. Welcome to being the only female in the group. By the end of this discussion, Jason was already snoring on the couch. Marcus and I said goodnight and headed down to his room, where he gave me a pair of sweatpants and the infamous sweatshirt yet again. I went to pee, and while washing my hands, I looked at myself in the mirror. Shit, I thought. I had no intention of having sex tonight, but the thought, maybe he'll just want to cuddle and pass out, made me chuckle out loud in the bathroom. Still, it's not happening, I told myself. By now, you all know the last sentence is bullshit, but hey, at least my intentions were right. All right, and it's just this sort of really fascinating passage about you and this guy and sex and blah, blah, blah. I have a couple of things here. Number one, so my favorite book ever is the autobiography of Malcolm X, and I read it when I was in college, kind of stuck with me, and Malcolm X was always a big, big, big thing of people who curse lack the language skills to say something in a more eloquent way. And I curse all the fucking time, like all the time. So I am the worst example. And I wonder, if we use them too much, do they lose the impact? Or do you feel like when you are cursing in print, it adds an oomph no matter how often or when you use it?
I honestly think it depends on the reader. For me, I wanted this book to be a representation of who I am and how I talk, and I curse like a fucking sailor.
What's your favorite curse?
Probably the F word.
I like how the first time you haven't cursed is when I ask you what your favorite curse is.
Right, I know, and now I'm like proper about it. But I, for when I'm writing, sometimes it's used for oomph, sometimes it's used for humor, sometimes it's just because like how my stream of consciousness was going. And I, you know, I know not all readers are going to love to be reading curse words every other sentence, but like, it's in my title. What are you guys expecting? it's just the way that I speak. I know it's something that I need to work on. But for the most part, it was done in a fun, lighthearted, you know, way to convey the ridiculousness of what was going on.
And here's my other thing. So I've had other, I would call your book a memoir more than a autobiography.
Yeah.
Other people have written memoirs. This idea that like these people I'm writing about, they are real people and they're going to read this. Like my mother is going to read this book. You know, some of these men are going to, my friends are going to read this book. And I wonder if that carried any weight with you or if there are any repercussions after the book came out.
That's a great question. So I'll dissect that in little pieces. My mom read the book in its very raw state and didn't know what to do with herself. She was like, oh my God, my daughter's a whore.
Did she say that out loud?
Yeah. I mean, we joke about it all the time. And obviously, you know, she lived that divorce and that second relationship and breakup with me. So it was very hard for her to go back and read that. For me, I was processing it all while I was writing it. So when I go back and read it, it's not as triggering. But for her, she was like very, it was hard. The second time she read it, which was when it was like ready to go to print, she was more just beaming with pride. I think she's apart from being an actress, she's a world healer and does healing sessions with people all over the world. And to see that some of her principles and the way that I helped explain self-love and some of my healing techniques that are in the book, she was really, really proud of. And that, you know, kind of superseded all the sex I was having in Europe. And as far as the guys, yeah, I knew that it was going to be a thing. All of them knew I was writing it. Javier, who's the main guy that broke up with me before Europe, actually signed a paper that like gave me, you know, full rein to go write how I wanted to write, which I was really thankful for. I don't know if I could have released it in the same like good conscience that I did without having that. And but yeah, it definitely, we had to get insurance because of my ex-husband, and like we didn't know how everybody was going to react in that sense. But for the most part, I talked to a lot of the people that I wrote about, and they've all read it and know that it's out in the world.
Does your ex-husband have a reaction to it?
Not that I know of. I know that he knows about it. I would be surprised if he hasn't read it, but I have not heard from him, and I am, knock on wood, hoping I don't. Yeah. Because look, I didn't write it as a revenge thing. He just happens to be a character in the beginning of my story. If he did read it, he knows that there's nothing that's not true. The only thing I left out was to do with him, and that was because it wasn't pertinent to the story and it would have just pissed him off and made him look bad, even more bad. Yeah. So that was the only thing that I chose to omit from it, just to kind of protect myself. But yeah, I mean, it's a whole different ballgame when you're writing about real people that are a part of your life. You know, it's a whole nother thing.
Before we continue with Two Writers Slinging Yang, a quick word from our sponsor.
Hey, this is Jeff Perlman. I'm here with my son, Emmett, who loves 503 Sports, Kings of the...
I want a Rudy Desitel jersey.
A what?
Rudy Desitel, star wide receiver for the fictitious football team in that classic Gary Coleman movie, The Kid with the Broken Halo.
Is that the one where Gary manages the San Diego Padres?
Dad, that's the kid from left field.
Oh, is that the one where Gary's really smart?
That's the kid with the 200 IQ.
I don't understand.
Gary Coleman, Rudy Desitel, 503 Sports, 503-sports.com. Just get me a cool jersey, okay?
Like a Jackie Robinson Cooper Padres jersey?
What you talking about, Dad?
How much debate did you have over the title, sort of playing off of another book?
The way that it happened, it's actually written in one of the chapters. The night before I was leaving on the trip, I had a discussion with Javier, and he dropped me off at my house, and he was like, how are you feeling, Gabs? And I said, like, I'm about to go on a journey of eat, pray, fuck my life. And I was like, oh my God, that's the title. And obviously when I came home and was gearing up to get everything together and publish, we had to check that legally. You can't copyright a title. Yeah. So you can really title anything whatever you want, but I wanted to make sure that it was kosher and okay, and I wasn't going to get in any trouble for it. It's honestly, it's not like I was trying to steal a title. Like it's a famous, well-known book. It's almost like a satirical play on a classic that everybody loves, kind of giving a nod to it, if you will, although it is vastly different. So yeah, there was luckily no humps I had to get over with that.
I have a question. I should know the answer to this, and I might delete this question even. did you self-publish?
I did. So I shopped it to publishers. They were all, everybody like wanted to change things, like I said before, and kind of like restructure it. And I knew that I wanted to keep control over it. Like I did the cover. I did everything that's involved with the book, like I did. That was a big reason I wanted to self-publish. But the other reason was that I didn't want to wait. This was such a personal story to me, and I just needed to get it out for like my mental health. And if you go with a publisher, as you well know, it's going to take, you know, roughly 2 years for them to like go through all the processing and like actually get it to shelves. And I just couldn't fathom waiting that much longer, because we shopped it for, you know, 7 or 8 months. And by that time I was just like, okay, I gotta get this out. And so it turned out to be the best option for me, but like publishing versus self-publishing is, you know, everyone will have a million different opinions and views and rights and wrongs on that.
Wait, well, I actually wanna get into this though, because it's kind of amazing. You have almost 200 ratings on Amazon, which is a big number.
Yeah.
The book has gotten a lot of attention. Obviously, you're an actress with a name which matters, but...
But like, I'm not, really. Like, in the grand scheme of things, like...
No, you're not Meryl Streep, but I'm saying, like, right. You have outlets that maybe Joe Schmo, who wants to write a book about his time, right. That the trucker in Tupelo isn't getting, but...
Yes.
But I am really fascinated because I think it's badass. Like, I think publishing your own book, putting it out there, hiring an editor, blah, 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 blah. On the one hand, it sounds nightmarish, and on the other hand, it sounds liberating. Is it more nightmarish, or is it more liberating?
It's both, but for me, because I'm such a control freak and I like to have things in my control and I know how they get done and I know I'm doing them the right way. So in that sense, it gave me a lot of peace of mind because I was like, you know, they're not going to take it and put some whack cover on it and put it in a couple stores and I won't know what's going on and I won't ever have any answers. I loved being able to like see where my metrics are, see what people are saying. And like, it's just given me a lot more control over the process, which has been nice, but it's not easy. It's definitely was a huge learning curve for me.
What did you learn about promoting a book?
That it's never ending. The promotion part is where that's what's so critical. Like people are like, how did you get so many reviews so fast? And like, how have you gotten it out the way that you've gotten it out? And it's really about the social media aspect of it. And I hate that that's even the answer because I have such a love-hate relationship with social media. If I didn't have to do it, I probably wouldn't. Yep. But unfortunately in our world today, if one person with a bigger following posts about how much they love a book, all of their people go and decide they want to read this book. And that's been the best way to get everything out there. I mean, I've done countless podcasts and radio interviews, and they're all great. And I do get readers pulled from those outlets. But the biggest one promotion wise has been when you can get bigger people on social media interested in the material.
Like what was your big hit on social media? Like we all have stories of the,
So I did Jana Kramer's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And she's amazing. We've become friends since then. And that was a big one for her to have me on that and then to post about it, which she did a couple times. And a couple people from the reality show The Challenge on MTV. Tori Deal was a big one. And her and I have become really good friends after that. She does like a lot of self-love promotion. And so the book kind of like really hit home with her. So it's been stuff like that that's really, really gotten the word out.
Are you sick of talking about your book?
No, I'm not, honestly, because it's such a big part of my life. All of the stuff that I went through happened for a reason, and it totally changed my career path and my life in a lot of ways. And so I'm really proud of that. And I also, every time I get a message from someone who's like, this book changed my life, or this book resonated with me, or this book made me realize that I was in a terrible relationship and needed to leave, it's so validating to know that my hardships, which now going through all this in the world today seem minuscule, it's really validating to know that they're helping other people.
What's like the best email or response you've gotten from someone?
I got a message from a girl, I hope she's okay with me talking about this, but I won't say her name. So a while back, and her mother had actually been killed. And after that, her boyfriend ended up cheating on her with her best friend, like while she was planning the funeral. It was so fucking heavy. And she reached out to me and was like, I just finished your book. And I literally feel like my mom somehow put your book in front of me and was speaking to me through your words. There's so many things that she used to say, and I feel so much more at peace with so many things. And I've stayed in touch with her since then. I respond to every person that messages me about the book because it's really important to me to know their stories and to have them know that I hear them. And I'm so thankful that my words and my journey can help bring some peace and healing to them.
Is there a conclusion to this all that men are just awful compared to women?
No. and I actually like really want to emphasize that. I don't hate men. I don't even hate the two men that I write about in this book. My ex-husband's like a little worse on the list, but you know, women do awful stuff too. I've gotten messages from men that are like, oh my God, I just read this book and I had a Javier in my life, but it was a woman. Yeah. It's a human thing, but I think the lesson in the end of it is that you need to love yourself first. Otherwise, the universe is going to be delivering you people that are going to mistreat you and not be the right fit for you.
All right, I'm going to ask you a final question here. I just did a quick Google search, and I come across a movie you were in, The Competition, and it got 17% on Rotten Tomato, no offense whatsoever. And I'm as guilty as anyone. A book comes out, I scroll through Amazon reviews, and it's almost like you look for the bad ones in a weird way. You look for the one star more than you look for. And I wonder, like, what is more damaging to you or agitating to you? You get the one star review for your book or some movie you're in gets a shit review?
The movies are like, that doesn't even faze me because I usually go in and do a week on it when people are, you know, it's not like my movie. It would be one thing if it was one of the ones I was directing or that I was responsible for. Those don't really faze me. I couldn't have even told you that that had a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes. All I know that I got to do a really fun stripper scene with Chris Klein, and it was like, it's the most fun I've ever had on set. But the book reviews, it's interesting because you'll get 195 star, like, this book is like life-changing reviews. And then there's the 5% that are like, she's a Kardashian, this is ridiculous, what a spoiled brat. And, you know, there's been some that I actually did a post about it a while ago, because one of the reviews that Amazon actually ended up taking down was like, this author needs to seek mental help. For me, it's like, I get it. You know, you don't like the book. That's fine. It's art. It's never going to be for everyone. I expected criticism when I wrote it. But like, if you were to say that to someone that's not mentally stable and like doesn't have their shit together and doesn't love themselves and know what a badass they are, that could be really damaging. And like, people don't take the time to realize that like their words affect people. And I'm a big advocate of mental health and going to therapy and making sure that like we're treating each other the right way. And that was a really big thing for me to read, to see how ruthless people can be. And I mean, I'm an actress, so like, I'm used to hearing no, I'm used to hearing criticisms. So like, I've read the bad reviews. It's like, people either really get it or they really don't. And if they're reading this book thinking they're reading some crazy, you know, novel that's gonna string together sentences in a way they've never experienced before, that's not this book. And the people that are leaving all the reviews that are saying how life-changing it was and how much they loved it and how they couldn't put it down, those are the people I wrote it for that needed it. You've got to kind of just turn a blind eye and be like, look, if that's their opinion, that's their opinion, and not everybody's going to love it.
It's funny. In a way, I think like what you're dealing with is, or one thing you have to confront, I don't think I was aware of until I actually moved to Southern California, is like, there's this thing where people, oh, poor you, your mom is a favorite actor, famous actress, and you live in whatever, Hollywood, you know, whatever, and blah, blah, blah. And really, I need to hear your whining when I'm working. And I feel like there's that unspoken thing in America where it's like, what right do you have to whine about anything?
And there's been reviews that have said, like, you know, her mom's famous, and like, why was this even hard for her to go? Not everybody can afford to go travel Europe. And to that, I say, well, I sold my wedding ring to go to Europe to afford that trip. My father died when I was 7. My mom was a single mom supporting us through all that. Nobody has any idea what she dealt with as far as like losing certain jobs in the industries. And it was really tough for her for a really long time. So when I read stuff like that, I'm kind of just like, well, you don't really know what the fuck you're talking about.
I feel like you left out there that you're getting paid $5 million to appear on this podcast. Did I not mention
that?
I not mention that?
Yeah. Thank God, because we all need it during this pandemic.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, listen, seriously, much, much respect for the hustle and self-publishing and saying, fuck you, and just putting it out there. I just think it's more guts than I have.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And it was great talking to you.
I want to thank today's guest, Gabrielle Stone, for joining me on Two Writers Slinging the Egg. You can follow Gabrielle on Twitter and Instagram at Gabrielle Stone, and buy Eat, Pray, FML, wherever books are peddled. One can listen to Two Writers Singing Yang on pretty much every podcast medium, and reviews are always appreciated. Music is by the dazzling MC White Owl. Thanks again for joining me, and remember, keep writing.